Hey, listen up, idiots. This is your spoiler warning. Also, you might get offended, so warning for that too, you idiots.
Hello, my name is Kyle.
And my name is Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
We are the only podcast in the known universe, as verified by Guinness Book of World Records.
It's true.
We hold that title. It's not a fake or false thing. It's totally fake. I'm making all that up. Damn it. I can't look him in the eyes and lie to him. I feel bad now.
We have those kind of faces.
Yeah. You guys really do. So, hi guys. We are joined by some guests today.
Who are these faces, Kyle?
We are on location at Plow Games here in Indianapolis, Indiana. A short little jog up the road from our HQ. And we are joined by James and Matt. Guys, thanks for coming on.
Thanks
for having us up here. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, James, first. What do you do here? What's your titles?
I am the lead illustrator and a project manager here at Plow. I've been here for basically all 10 years that Plow's been around,
okay. Or
darn near close to it. So,
I am a software engineer. I typically spend my time making apps for iPhones and whatnot.
Okay. So, I've noticed. So that was like the big first thing. You guys aren't just a game developing company.
Right.
So game developing is not exactly paying the bills right now?
No, it's something. So we're all, including our bosses, you know, we all like to play games.
And, of course,
you know, they have a history doing PC games before Plow came along. You know, John Deere Tractor Simulator and some of those kind of things.
Man, those things can be huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then they started Plow, and it's you know, does services for businesses, you know, websites and apps and all that good stuff, and that's most of what we do. But because we all like games and playing games and you know, video games, board games, tabletop games, whatever, we decided that we were going to use some resources to make a card game and see what we could do with it. And this is really kind of Kickstarter related or Kickstarter tangential, that decision. But, you know, it's nice. It's a nice opportunity to be able to do that.
So do you think, like, you would have that opportunity if there wasn't the overlying company already established? Like, because one of the things I like about game developers, especially people indie, is that, you know, there's that whole risk. You guys, I mean, it's obviously still a risk, but do you feel it's more of a safety net, too, that there's other things that you fall back on that kind of help push things into this? Like,
well, I think what it is for us, at least, is it makes the game development stuff, the consumer, you know, and stuff like this more of a passion project sort of deal.
Cool.
Like, yeah. Less of like... risk management and like, oh, we're gonna, you know, we have to spend X number of hours on it and X number of resources. Like, obviously we still, you know, try to do that as much as we can, but if you have a artist who is sitting idle for, you know, a couple hours a week, might as well make a game.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
and you have those people available.
Yeah,
I use them.
Yeah, we're on staff, we're getting paid anyway.
Yeah,
so it gives us the opportunity to, you know,
brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant when you think about it.
Maximizing the use of resources. So,
and I would also say that being here has really helped kind of to establish networking with people. Like, I've come up with, you know, half a dozen interesting game ideas, but I haven't had access to the talented artists and stuff that I've met through this company.
Yeah.
So it's also opened some doors that would not have been there otherwise.
Excellent.
Yeah, having the you know, follow through to actually, all right, I come up with a game, I'm going to make a prototype. Well, now I got to find an artist. Now I got to, you know, do all the research about, you know, the manufacturing and, you know, that whole process. And I got to plan my Kickstarter and, you know, that whole thing. Like, if it's one or two people, I think a lot of times it kind of becomes a little bit more difficult, especially if it's only the one person, you know.
Be very make or break.
Yeah. So, and you can invest a lot of your time and yourself into it. And, I mean, we still do that here, obviously, but it's a little bit different because we're all here and we all know each other pretty well. And have similar kind of interests and thoughts on, you know, so approaching these kind of projects. So,
sure. Yeah. Okay. So you're like business mindedly. Last Front, that's the game we just demoed, which you'll see footage of at some point in this episode. This is kind of more your passion project, James. Matt, you have one that we'll talk about in a minute. But with Last Front, you said it was kind of your passion project, the one you were excited about. What kind of led you to a historical-based card game? And kind of when you were envisioning this idea, like, who was your target audience? Like, who did you want to sell this for? Like, why did you make the choices you made on this game?
Okay.
Just as broad as I can be.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a little harder to do that kind of retroactively. So initially, like, back when the first, like, iPod Touch came out, mm-hmm. we did a tower defense game called Last Front. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So we decided that as we were going to make a card game, we were picking themes and stuff. We knew we were going to do a card game. We knew we wanted it to be kind of small, just cards, so you're mm-hmm. not having to deal with, like, manufacturing all these other miscellaneous components and what have you. And, you know, start kind of small and modest and get an idea of, like, how it would come together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to apply kind of the World War II theme to it because, oh, it kind of makes sense, right? You have these the different units and the things you're fighting for, and it becomes really easy to follow that theme. We already had, you know, some of the branding trademark stuff, you know, from the
that
mobile
makes it
game.
Really
was,
easy.
Was the mobile game also historically based and themed? Yep. So it was war themed too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I mean, even for that, I did like a ton of research. Like, we made this like super elaborate website back in the day where, you know, I'd research like the Prelinger archives and find like video, like old propaganda films and like whatever else.
Wow.
And, you know, here's the Battle of the Bulge. And all the sets were done. So there's North Africa and, you know, Eastern Front, Western Front, all that kind of thing, and four different factions. So it was like very elaborate, like super themes historically and planned out with a lot of supporting material and stuff, like all the research that went into like rank insignia and medals for achievements and that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of that kind of already in the back of my head as we were doing this, and then it just became a matter of like, oh, okay, these are the like the special cards and the icon cards or whatever. This is the context for them, right? This is what it's going to be, like Patton, okay. Well, and then you have to decide, and then this is where the history nerds will get you. You know, who is better tank commander, Patton, or, you know, is he a +2 and Rommel's a +1? You know, that kind of thing.
I would think so, but...
No, I mean, we won the war, but...
Exactly. history is written by the winners.
Exactly. So, so that was kind of, you know, finding the pictures to support it and then going to the archives and securing licenses for
what I love about it is that you do use the actual pictures from the archives to represent the actual people, and it's a nice little touch. And you know, when you get a card, you're like, oh yeah, that dude was a fucking real guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was really involved in this, like, I'm not a super huge buff, but like seeing some of them come up, I'm like, oh yeah, it would make sense that he's gonna have tank bonus, or the sniper from Russia, she's gonna take out, you know, this one dude or whoever I want to. That's I like that,
right.
it really is playing into it, and it all has a purpose. So very, very nicely done. Very
thanks.
Kudos.
Yeah, the research was
go ahead.
The research component of it took a lot of time. Like initially, like the photos were like, okay, well, it'll save us a little bit on, if we don't have to illustrate every single one of these things, and we can kind of mm-hmm. play up the context or whatever of World War II and like the historical nature of it and sell it, so you know, like that is like quasi educational, right? Well, I mean, you're introducing people to some of these like different characters, like, you know, most people know like one side or the other, but some of the like Virginia Hall, the spy, she had a wooden leg. It had a code name. I can't remember what it was. It's like Chester or something. Like her code name for her wooden leg was Chester. But anyway, but she worked, you know, like deep behind you know,
is she, Germany line. Is she one of the characters in the
I
deck?
I think that's the one yeah, I played to, is it? To take that card from yeah. that. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so throwing some of those in was kind of cool. The fight races and that kind of thing.
Perfect. So. I was going to say, I'm not a history buff, so I'm going to ask questions and sound completely foolish because I'm not entirely sure. I will ask a question that my wife asked, and this will loosen the mood of everyone. She was really concerned. Where's Hitler in this game? And then why choose to not include him?
Well, technically...
Is he in there somewhere? Do we just not get to him?
He's one of the event cards. He's not, like, you know, power struggle, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. And that one plays all icon cards and play must be discarded. The Germans were always backbiting each other yeah. And that kind of thing. So,
trying to take out Hitler.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting thing too, and, you know, you think about this what you will, so some of these historical photos, whatever... In order to sell the game in Europe, you cannot have any swastikas.
Yeah.
So we have to go back in and Photoshop out a bunch of swastikas.
Okay.
In some of these, and then you'll notice, like on the German flag,
it's the Iron Cross.
It's the Iron Cross, yeah. Not the yeah. So.
What a cathartic day for that person who's on Photoshop, and all they have to do is just get yep. rid of swastikas. They're making the world a better place, a pixel at a time. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, that was my job. So. It was nice.
I figured it might be some kind of a touchy thing, or that's interesting that it's hard to sell in Europe. So
it's implies illegal.
Swastikas are not allowed over there, bro. Yeah.
Even in a historical context.
Nope.
Okay.
Not over there.
I mean, if it was like a history book, I'm sure, but not like in a game or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
At any rate, you would hedge your bets and just say like they can go. It's not like it's intrinsic.
A big thing, like. Activision and all them have to go through too when they sell that, and like all the Wolfensteins,
they don't have swastikas when they get shipped over.
Nope.
Yeah.
I'm very ignorant to all of this. Yeah. I did not know this was a thing.
It's a big thing, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for a reason.
Well, obviously,
I get it,
yeah.
Yes, but I just didn't think about that.
Yep.
Well, perfect. Playing this game. We notice a similarity to Risk, but I think mainly because that's one of the few other history-based board games. I don't think there are too many that are outside of like the big miniature battle kind of table fights, essentially. But what are some of the board game influences you had when going into this?
Someone asked me that recently, and I it's hard to say. I mean, it's a little bit of magic, right? You have the same kind of things with counters and burns, and, you know, you have resources and things that boost resources and that kind of thing. You know, Munchkin, maybe.
Yeah, I got that with the adding up and throwing numbers and trying to beat it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, it's a hybrid of, it's a kind of no direct influence, I would say. It's kind of like just by osmosis. You know, it's like, these are all different things that I've played. Honestly, I've played more, as far as card games go, I've played more of, like, the According to Hoyle type, you know, those kind of card games than anything. So, I think direct influence is, like, that's probably more relevant, I guess.
Okay. Perfect. Would you like to ask?
Well, I mean, you had a good run going, and you know a lot more about the board game aspect than I do. So here's one that is more in my line. So when I met you guys, you were also demoing a video game called Space Jerks. Right? That is the name?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I like that name.
It's a good name,
right? It's a great name.
Yeah.
And it tells you exactly what the game is from the outset. You know what you're getting into. But your focus primarily, from what I've seen here, is it's more of the physical board game. So why the board game over the video game at this point?
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
Right. Because you don't need a programmer to make a board game.
Sure.
And programmers...
You
don't need one. I mean, sometimes they just attach themselves to projects.
They're around.
Format.
Now, generally, the programmers are, like, so, like, busy. Their time is, you know, obviously super valuable. And
And you guys are making other things besides games, so I get that now.
Well, and to get the thing to even work, you have to have the programmer. Like, here, it's just, like, I can have some index cards and scribble some notes on it to get it to the point where it works. Like, the hexes for that Matt made were from some of those, like, hex tiles that you can just get, like, the little card ones.
Mm-hmm.
and that was how he built the original prototype.
And we used little plastic trains from Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Really?
Those were our original monsters. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We hadn't even thought of a theme yet at that point, so we had bounced a few things around after we decided that the gameplay was solid. So, but yeah, I mean, basically, as far as the video game goes, you know, that for us, Space Jerk specifically, and you guys are welcome to come back whenever, you know, we get an update, you know, from the PopCon build. It was an opportunity to dig into Unreal Engine a little bit.
Sure.
Predominantly, we do like Unity stuff.
Okay.
And then you know, we applied for a grant through Epic as nice. Well. So to sort of mitigate the costs. I mean, I personally feel like it's maybe 2 weeks away from being something that's like beta worthy. There's only like a couple features I think that are, you know, kind of core essential things that make Space Jerks missing that need to be added before it would be there. But you know, billable work, you know, kind of has to come first. So
outside of like programming itself, taking that completely out, like what are some other like differences or even similarities between creating a physical board game and like a video game? Like, what are your thought processes?
I mean, from a design standpoint, I don't know, Matt, do you have any thoughts?
It's an interesting question. Obviously, with a video game, your input systems are really limited.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so you're thinking either a mouse and keyboard or maybe an Xbox controller, which is really going to limit your audience because we have always done PC games. So if you're assuming your player has a controller hooked up, that's not nearly the number of people who have a mouse and keyboard. Anyway, you know, there's just, I feel like there's a lot more outside the box you can do with a board game.
Yeah.
Because when you're using Unity and Unreal, that's a pre-written engine. You know, there's definitely some parameters that you have to play within. But we can 3D print whatever kind of crazy nonsense we want. We can do it on tiles or on a board. We can have any kind of dice or tokens. It's pretty much your imagination's the limit with a board game.
And if you want to make a rule change on the fly and just see how it feels and then switch back, you know, you can do that just by, like, scribbling on a piece of paper with your pen. It's a little bit more logistics involved, especially if it's a kind of core mechanic in a video game, to get in there and change it and then come back.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, even like hackability, I think like a physical board game, if somebody at their house wants to make a completely different way to play it, they can.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
like in a video game, you're really, I mean, they're going to play it the way that you're intending them to do it, so.
Especially lately, it seems there's a big trend for video games to be very, like, kind of on the rails. And
very hand-holdy.
You know, hand-holdy. Yeah, it's like
linear.
Linear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like, you know, back in the day, some of those games you can find, like, a whole new, remember Bionic Commando back in the, like, you could get through that game, you could get through a level, but then, and it's really hard, just the controls of it or whatever, but then you play it through again, and you're like, oh, I didn't even realize this area was over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little bit more, you know, exploration involved, I think. You know, I think a lot of the big video games, especially, they want to drive you down a narrative path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're kind of forcing you, like it's an interactive movie almost.
Yep, big set pieces,
so,
things like that.
Yeah.
And kind of keeping, you know, I'm kind of more of our video game guy, he's more of our board game guy. Have you ever thought about maybe adapting things that you have, like Last Front, into maybe more of a, like a, an app-based game too? Like something like, or even maybe Hearthstone, that, you know, anything like that.
I think Small World or Ticket to Ride also do, I think, $3 apps of the board games on their phones too.
Oh, I think it was like $7 when I looked at Ticket to Ride.
Seven?
But their Ticket to Ride, they can do that, and people will pay it. You know, that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem too. Is like, you know, for us, like, not, they didn't make the you know, tablet version of the game or whatever until the actual core, like, main board game had become wildly successful,
okay,
right?
Sure.
Because it costs money to develop.
Absolutely.
That.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, and really, don't know how you feel about it, but I've played games where they require you to have an app, or darn near require you to have an app in order to be able to play it. Mansions of Madness.
Yeah, you know. We just played The Alchemist, I think, at Gen Con, and that's app only to mix the potions and stuff, and I don't know where you're going. It sounds like you might be going negatively about it.
I'm not a big fan. Like, what's the point?
Agreed. Like, you just... It's like the VHS games of old.
Yes.
Like the Shadow game, where you stick in the VHS and watch some dude in makeup.
Oh my god.
Tell you
Nightmare?
Move your
that?
Space. That's it. It was Nightmare. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. That ridiculous.
We did that once. We got it for family. We'd get like one board game as a family for Christmas every year, and that was one. Oh my god, that was ridiculous. I think we played it once. It's like, this is beyond dumb.
Mm-hmm. Sucks, Dad. Way to go.
I would say that kind of to the counter of that is there's been a lot of times we've played Mansions of Madness first edition and been kind of bummed out that it's everybody versus the Dungeon Master or whoever he is.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to all play on the same team.
That's true.
And so if the app lets me do that, that's cool. But definitely don't shoehorn it in just because it's a gimmick. Mm. That's terrible.
Sure.
I would agree with that too.
Or make your game so complicated that you need an app to keep track of everything. That's my objection.
Go back to the start. If it's too much, you need an app. Yeah, because I think that Alchemist game was like, well, you don't need an app, but then somebody has to just sit there with the formulas the entire time and tell you, is it right or wrong? It's like, well, that's not good game design then.
Yeah,
that's
why computer games were invented in the first place, is to take some of that out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
We got on a tangent about...
That's good, though. I mean, that's the way it goes.
No,
let's
get back to these questions. So, going back to Last Front, obviously there are many historic events, so it seems ripe for expansions. I know you guys have one expansion at least already out. Is that right? Just one?
We do. Yeah, currently it's only available on our website, but it was part of our Kickstarter. We kind of broke our stretch goals into like 18 card increments.
Okay.
So after 3 stretch goals, we had enough for the pack, the 54 card or whatever pack. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we had 2 more 18 card expansions that we managed to hit. But again, those are mostly Kickstarter. Otherwise, they're available through our website. The game itself, you can get through stores if you ask for it.
Okay.
But, As far as other expansions go, a lot of our backers are like, oh, are you going to do Pacific? Like, we really want Pacific. And during our Kickstarter campaign, the best we were able to... We had that as, like, a stretch goal, like, for, like, way, way, way down there. Because we would have to, like, go through basically the whole new project. It would be a whole separate game, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the research, all the art, blah, blah, blah. The best we were able to manage is, like, with that very last stretch goal, we kind of modified it a little bit so that we could put some ship units in, Japanese territories with their own, you know, bonus, and a couple of like flavor cards that are specific to, you know, the Pacific theater. So yeah, it's on the horizon. I would want it to be a different game play, but I would want the cards to be cross compatible.
Okay.
That would be the goal. So you would basically play with either this territory deck, or you would play with the Japanese, you know, island hopping thing, and you're collecting islands, and you get bonuses based on the type of island and that kind of thing.
Okay.
I got it all worked up in the old noodle, but, you know, it's just, we want to do something different for a minute before we circle back around.
Sure. I was going to suggest, similar to the Munchkin route, what about the last Cosmic Front, in which case you just go really out there, keep same mechanics, but... Really, just like you could do anything you want, whatever's the hot top. What pirate games are in? Do a pirate theme.
Yep.
Have you? Are you open to those ideas? Have you thought about that, or would you like to keep this kind of limited to history and historical events, since there really aren't too many of those board games out there?
That's true.
Yeah. No, we actually had thought before we decided to revisit. So Space Jerks, we had done like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago as a Unity demo for the Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real gameplay. It's more like you're just walking around jumping on these different planets. And it's pretty crazy when you're wearing the Oculus, of course. So, you know, it's pretty cool. But we never really fully developed it. And so before we decided to revisit it and do it in Unreal, we did think about, like, oh, what if we essentially reskin or tweak Last Front to be Space Jerks, the card game?
Okay.
But again, it's like, it's not Munchkin, so I don't know if he can quite get away with that. And it's like someone gets last front and then they get, you know, basically space jerk last front. It's kind of like, oh, this is the same game I already have this game.
Yeah.
You know? Frankly, I don't understand like how there can be so many Munchkin sets. Like, I guess
because I think there's a lot of repetition. They just rename them, and there might be like one little tweak in each new set, but otherwise, it's exactly the same.
And a lot of people buy they have the licensed IP stuff, which is like huge now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll get Firefly Munchkin or like whatever. You know,
Alien versus Predator Munchkin, Cthulhu Munchkin, Shakespeare Munchkin was the one this year. Which nice. Is,
all right.
I guess there's an audience for that.
Sure.
I don't know them, but okay. All right.
One thing I always like to ask when we speak to developers and stuff, Plow Games, where does that name come from? Like,
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I really honestly couldn't tell you. If Greg was here, he's out of town on a meeting, he could probably tell you a little bit better than I've been here 10 years. I didn't really
I'm surprised,
put
yes.
much thought of it. Well, you know, I think the idea is growing ideas was our, it used to be our tagline.
Okay.
And so,
okay.
you know, we're in the Midwest and,
well, and
you know.
It kind of clued me in when you guys talked about the John Deere tractor simulator.
That's what I was thinking,
They pull a plow too. Like,
yep.
I kind of get where it's going. I just didn't know if there was an official story behind that.
No, I think Greg could probably answer that better than I could. But, you know, I've always kind of, you know, interpreted as like, you know, our tagline was growing ideas.
I like that.
We're from the Midwest, and it's kind of a selling point because we're going to be cheaper than, you know, some of these like big companies out in like California or like West Coast or East Coast, whatever.
Sure.
So just people like working with Midwestern developers. It's just a different mindset, apparently.
You don't hear about it much, but it is growing, which is good. Like I said, you know, I was really excited when I first met you guys that you guys are an Indianapolis-based game development company. It's awesome that this is a thing that is happening, because you always hear about it either Japan, San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what you got.
Washington, like, Seattle, that area.
Yeah, all in that East Coast stuff, so.
Yeah.
I'm just glad you guys are here, and this is awesome, and I'm glad to see that, so.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
Yes.
Okay. That's Can we get some affirmations that you are glad to be alive?
Please? Yes, I am. I am gladish to be here. I'm glad enough.
All right. Well, I think I'll do one more question, and then maybe Kyle have one more question too.
I like this one too.
This is gonna be my question.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Given any budget, access to any IP, anything you want to do, dream project. Either video game or board game. And then I would like two answers. One from each of you, please.
Dream project?
I mean, honestly, I would just like to be able to do... I would like to do anything hobo-themed.
Really?
Hobo-themed.
Yes. Okay, I like that.
Now, I would normally say, like, my first instinct is, like, Star Wars would be rad.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, ugh, then you gotta deal with the IP people, and blah,
but again,
blah,
you
and
have
it seems like
just carte blanche, but you have the IP, no restraint, this is just dream.
If they let me do with it whatever I wanted with it, it'd be super cool to do Star Wars without having to get a bunch of checks and balances in place, but, like, I want to do a hobo-themed game. At some point, there's going to be a hobo game from Plow if I have anything to say about it.
So, like, Oregon Trail, but you're a hobo hopping rails style?
Yeah.
Because that would be awesome.
Yeah.
You could still totally die of dysentery.
I another one kicking around up here, so it's...
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I have never heard of a game about a hobo.
No.
Totally involved in that.
No. Yeah. Okay. That's a good one.
You guys stalled for as long as you could, but I really don't know what to say here. I would say that as long as I get to keep doing this for the rest of my life, making board games,
it's pretty sweet.
I mean,
you don't care what you're making. So if tomorrow they're like, you're making a Garbage Pail Kids board game, you're down for that?
Oh,
that
you
want to work on that?
Yeah.
Incredibly.
Who would not want to do that? You're the only person I think.
Okay,
in the room.
Apparently I'm the one who.
Oh my god, Garbage Pail Kids.
Garbage Pail Kids, not Cabbage Patch Kids. Like, actually, one of my friends.
Yeah, okay. Garbage that would be rad. Were the cool cards.
My friend at Heron, who's also an adjunct, does Garbage Pail Kid cards for Tops. Like he legit is like making them currently. Still make them.
Wow, that's news to me. I didn't know they were still making them.
Yeah.
Where do you buy them?
I am not sure. At comic shops, I'm sure. I mean, okay. I haven't gone to check the look.
I would love to get some Garbage Pail Kids cards. Yeah. I think I still have a bunch of my old ones. Yeah. When I was a kid, somewhere.
But you were thinking Cabbage Patch Kids.
I was thinking Cabbage Patch Kids. I was trying to think of dull, completely uninteresting.
You know what?
Cabbage Patch
Kids.
I look at what
they have done with My Little Pony.
Oh my God!
And rebirthing.
Please don't tell me you're a brony.
No, I'm not a brony. Okay. But they were just the way that they were just given access to totally take it and make it their own.
Oh, make it their own. Yeah,
that's true.
And make it awesome. You know. I can say, you know, if you give me Cabbage Patch Kid, but you give me the freedom to just go crazy, I think I could even still have fun with it.
Precious moments in the Doom universe.
Oh, they're precious moments.
Right? Still super violent, but you're in heaven as a cherub little angel.
I think that's probably already a mod.
That might be. That would be awesome. But still. So
I'm going to get off this, because all I'm doing is thinking about bad things to give you, and we're not going to play that game.
Like, so... I got just a few more here. So, like, Last Front, you're developing it. Like, what is, like, how involved is the testing process? How many times are you going back to that drawing board and, like, okay, this isn't really working? Things like that.
Well, I mean, you kind of start big and you work your way backwards from it, right? You know, you have, and then really just, you get in enough people's hands and they're going to find things. A lot of times it's going to be, like, a personal preference sort of thing. And then other times you're going to hear the same thing kind of come up multiple times. And those are the things that you really need to,
look at, to
get involved with. Yeah. I mean, we spent a lot of time testing it internally and at, like, you know, we had two Pop Cons and a Gen Con, you know, first exposure hall round that we tested it at. Those were good because we had some, like, legit gamers and stuff come give feedback. We had a game... reviewer take a look at it and help with some of the rules clarification and stuff, but I mean there was never really a point where we were like, you know, oh, we gotta throw this, like, it's just not working, like, period. Okay. It's like usually there's just a couple tweaks here and there, like number of this kind of card or that kind of card or changing a modifier or clarifying a rule and that kind of thing, and it, you know, kind of works out.
So did you guys have, like, things where, like, all right, end of the day today, we're going to play Last Front, who's in? Like, a lot of time. That's cool. I would love that. That would, like, be an awesome thing for a job.
He would write up, here's the new cards, you know, and here's how the rules have slightly changed, and we play it.
I'd have to read my chicken scratch on a, you know, cut-up index card.
And I'd beat him a bunch, and he'd say, okay, that doesn't work.
Oh, Evan.
How do I change this so Matt doesn't win?
Well, no, like, literally, like, there's a guy that, you know, he would find, like, the exploit, and it'd be like, okay, that is something we need to put the kibosh on.
That's what I like to do. Even in video games, I'm like, all right, how can I break this system and make it my advantage? And I try to do that a lot in any game, because a lot of times there's something there.
Yeah.
So I'm always curious, things like this, where, like, how much time are you spending looking for those, and are there multiple eyes on it, and what if something does slip through, like... Yeah, I mean, after a point, you can't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, if it slips through, it slips through. You know, it is what it is. I mean, to my knowledge, I haven't really heard anything along those lines on Last Front. But you just put it in front of lots of people that are not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
You explain it to them. You have them figure it out themselves. You know, you get their interpretation. Like you guys, you came in and you're like, oh, you know, we weren't sure if that was if you're attacking, so it was just between the two of you or just between everybody. So, like, you know, second edition rules, we're probably going to need to make sure that's, like, extra super clear if it's already, you know, in there. It's just how it is. And different people are going to look at different things. You get that rules lawyer who's gonna you know, find ways to break it. So.
Rules lawyer, card police. You guys got a lot of law enforcement.
Legal jargon. Yeah.
Finish it, buddy.
What am I finishing? That last one?
Yeah.
Well, I will ask it like Kyle wrote it. Ultimate goal.
Ultimate goal?
Ultimate goal. Is that for the company, for Last Front?
Yeah, for in general, what do you hope to achieve with Cloud Games?
Just to keep doing it. I mean, just to keep doing the kind of stuff that we do, and whether that's the stuff we do for our corporate clients or whatever, app and game development and web development, whatever. You know, it's more fun for me if we're doing games. Obviously,
yeah, obviously. I mean,
we've done stuff for Build-A-Bear and HH Greg, and we always find like fun stuff in there. Hammer Mill Paper, that kind of thing. Guinness World Records. We did a game. A suite of games, actually.
Okay.
We're familiar with Guinness. They gave us a world record. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that from earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
just being able to continue to do it and finding an excuse and the time to be able to do this kind of, like, the passion stuff. And luckily, you know, our employers are of a mindset that, you know, this is something of value just in and of itself. And, you know, helps keep everybody engaged and active, and it's fun. So
I think my ultimate goal is to see this stuff become self-sufficient.
Yeah,
yeah.
And just have a constant. Either I'm not saying Plow has to be exclusively games, but I want Plow Games to be its own full-time, self-sufficient entity that, and stay right here in Indiana.
Yeah. I mean, you know, get that Midwest attitude. And plow through it. Huh? That's terrible. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
God, I'm the worst. So where can, you know, people check out more of your guys' stuff? Can you, like, plug it? And, you know, I know you got some dates coming up, too.
So. Yeah. We'll be doing a couple more game tests, game demos, rather, for this one. I mean, it's already done, so testing's right out. Comic Book University in Greenwood. On the 29th, which is Tuesday.
29th of August.
Yeah, of August. And then the 10th of September, which is a Sunday, at Good Games downtown on Meridian, are the two demos coming up. And then you can get the game through our website, lastfrontgame.com. And you can also order it through most game stores. We'll have a distributor that carries it. You just have to ask for it.
Okay.
And they can look it up.
Cool. And we'll have links to all that in our episode descriptions and things of that, too. So, you know, I would definitely recommend, if you're into card games at all, it was a lot of fun. I know it got heated last night, but
it did.
I think getting heated makes this game fun. And it,
yeah, I think so,
I mean,
too.
It is a war-based game. It's not going to be friendly. So I really enjoyed it.
And it's very easy to learn, too.
Yeah, easy to learn.
That's the other thing.
It looks very nice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would absolutely recommend. People should definitely check out Last Front. And I'm very excited to see what you guys got coming up in the very near future. I'm looking forward to talking about this here in a bit. And hopefully Space Jerks really takes off, because that's what really caught my eye as the gaming guy. So,
oh, yeah.
Matt, James, thank you guys for letting us come up here talk to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope we get to come back sometime when you guys got some more stuff to show off to us. We definitely would love to. So,
yeah.
Thank you guys. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We really hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, you can check us out at experiencegrind.com or find us over at facebook.com/experiencegrind.
Watch me play games on twitch.tv/experiencegrind.
We really like money. We really like money. We really like money. You should give us your money.
Find us on Patreon. Just search for Experience Grind Podcast.
Email us at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. It's current year.
Follow us if you like butt stuff.